uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, yes, this morning, George W. Bush going on national television talking about how he's going to get this under control. He's being interviewed by Diane Sawyer on, what is it, Good Morning America, I believe the program is. And she asks him, like, you know, President Bush, seems like there should have been a response. People were expecting that immediately after the hurricane that you would have had, you know, thousands of troops and food and water and everything would be fine. And, you know, why not? Why didn't it happen? And, of course, he doesn't quite have it together enough to say, well, we goofed. or, you know, perhaps a more truthful answer like, well, I had other priorities. I had to play golf. And then I had a fundraiser I had to go to. And then I had to go speak to a bunch of Republicans about Social Security reform. And then I had to play golf again. And, you know, I've got to have a life, you know. No. Instead, he says, we couldn't have anticipated this. The levies, for example. She says, Diane Sawyer says, didn't we prepare for this? I mean, didn't we have some idea that the levies might break? I mean, why wasn't anything done about this? And he's like, well, nobody could have anticipated that the levies would break. Right? Do you get this? Nobody could have anticipated that the levies would break. I mean, what kind of insanity is that? I mean, it's just, and Bush just going on and on and on about this, and the reality is really quite different. As Sid Blumenthal points out in Salon.com, a year ago, the Army Corps of Engineers proposed to study how New Orleans could be protected from a catastrophic hurricane, but the Bush administration ordered that the research not be done. Not be done. This was, and then back in 1995, we had a flood that killed 5 people. Congress created the Southeast Louisiana Urban Flood Control Project, SFLA, and in which the Corps of Engineers was supposed to strengthen the levees and the pumping stations. Right, this still by Sid Blumenthal, this just a great roundup piece. You're seeing bits and pieces of this all over. What amazes me is that the mainstream media has not yet picked this up. That in 2001, in early 2001, now keep in mind, this is right after George Bush took power. He assumed the presidency in January of 2001. Right afterwards, a report was issued by FEMA. This was a report that was commissioned by the Clinton administration that says that there are 3 highly probable disasters in the near future that could hit the United States of America. 3 highly probable disasters that could hit the United States of America. Number 1, a terrorist attack in New York City. Yes, FEMA predicted this. Now, it wasn't like it was a secret. You'll keep in mind, the Bush administration had 56 specific warnings before 9/11 that Al-Qaeda was going to attack New York City and or Washington, D.C., high-profile targets involving hijacked airplanes. All of this stuff we're discovering now from insiders in the administration, Richard Clark, Paul O'Neill, all of this stuff is coming out. But they did nothing. Well, they did something. George W. put Dick Cheney in charge of the counterterrorism task force, since FEMA had said, hey, the most likely scenario for a disaster in the United States, terrorist attack in New York City. Oh, let's put Dick Cheney in charge of it. Before 9/11, before September of 2001, Dick Cheney's task force on counterterrorism never met. Not once. This is incompetence and failure at a level that, if not passing the threshold of criminal, certainly approaches it. Talk about malfeasance in office. Talk about failing to fulfill your responsibilities of office. Dick Cheney put in charge of the counterterrorism task force after in early 2001, as soon as these guys came to power, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, comes to them and says, three probable scenarios. Number one, a terrorist attack in New York City. Dick Cheney put in charge of the task force on terrorism. He does nothing. Instead, he's meeting with Ken Lay and carving up the country of Iraq. Yes, Iraq, in April of 2001, 6 months before 9/11, carving up Iraq. And it took a right-wing group to do the lawsuit to get the records of the maps, and you can see them over on Judicial Watch's website, judicialwatch.org. You can see the maps of Iraq carved up with the names of the oil fields and countries that were potential suitors. That was number one. Number two, on the list of probable disasters that could hit the United States that would require the response by an intervention of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, number two, a Category 4 or Category 5 level hurricane hitting the city of New Orleans. 2001. And along with this came funding to help rebuild the levees and strengthen the levees. The Bush administration's response.
You know, guys, it's really more important to give tax cuts to billionaires and millionaires. After all, they support the Republican Party.
Number three, by the way, for our listeners in California. Number three on the list was a catastrophic earthquake in San Francisco. And to the best of my knowledge, the National Guard of California is not preparing San Francisco for an earthquake. They're in Iraq fighting a war. Actually, it's not a war that they're fighting. They're in Iraq maintaining a failing occupation in the midst of somebody else's civil war that we started with an idiotic invasion. Idiotic, that's a lousy term. With an invasion that was designed to gain political capital for George W. Bush. I mean, let's just lay it right out. In 2004, Sidney Blumenthal notes, the Bush administration cut funding requested by the New Orleans District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for holding back the waters of Lake Pontchartrain, cut their funding by more than 80%. At the beginning of this year, they forced the New Orleans District of the Corps of Engineers to impose a hiring freeze. The Senate, they were going to discuss whether or not to fix the levees of New Orleans. Yeah, but they had more important things to do. They had to come back into session to talk about Terri Schiavo. I hope this doesn't sound like a cynical rant, because I'm really, you know, it's just like, this is just what's so. I mean, this is what happened. Here you have the New Orleans newspaper, the Times-Picayune, which has been publishing for heaven only knows how long, long, long time. Today they're not publishing because their presses are underwater, but they are publishing an online edition. And in the online edition, the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and I quote, "Nobody can say they didn't see it coming. Now in the wake of one of the worst storms ever, serious questions are being asked about the lack of preparation." Now, here's an interesting twist to it, another piece that, again, you're not going to hear about on Hardball with Chris Matthews or ABC or CBC, CBN, CBS or NBC Evening News. You're not going to hear it from the big media companies, from Disney or from General Electric, the big defense contractor, the large Republican donors who own the big media stations. You're not going to hear it from them. But it's true. Wetlands. Every 2 miles of wetlands between New Orleans and the Gulf of Mississippi, and there's a substantial stretch of land there, every 2 miles of wetlands reduces the storm surge passing over it by a half a foot. It's a giant barrier to storm surges. On the other hand, you take those wetlands out, you pave it over, you start building McMansions or strip malls or parking lots, and what do? You got a storm surge that'll just sweep right through. Well, this is something that the Bush senior administration figured out. In 1990, a federal task force, notes Blumenthal, began restoring lost wetlands surrounding New Orleans. When W came in, following on his father's policy that had been continued by Bill Clinton, he promised that there would be no net loss of wetlands around New Orleans. But in 2003, 2 years ago, as he was having to raise money to get ready for his presidential campaign, and the building industry is saying, hey, we got some money for you, George. You just have to do what we want, you know. He reversed his position. He flip-flopped and unleashed the developers. No problem. Let the developers go in there. There's land, there's money to be made. Let free enterprise do its thing. The Army Corps of Engineers, notes Blumenthal, and the Environmental Protection Agency then announced, as a result, clearly, of the Bush administration's policies, they then announced that they could no longer protect wetlands unless they were somehow related to interstate commerce. Now, this related to interstate commerce, this is the key to the con judiciary theory. John Roberts' theory of why there shouldn't be affirmative action, why there shouldn't be abortion, why abortion shouldn't be decriminalized by the United States Supreme Court, why the United States Supreme Court should not be involved in things like Brown versus Board of Education and making sure that regardless of race, people have access to the same education, is because he suggests, and many of the originalists suggest, Scalia, Thomas, number one, that if it doesn't say it in the Constitution, it ain't so. That we should be living by the rules of 1787. Yes, let's bring back slavery and women voting? Good heavens. Number one, if it doesn't say it in the Constitution, it ain't so. And number two, the only provision in the Constitution that gives the federal government the ability to tell states what to do, is the Commerce Clause, which says that the federal government has the right to regulate commerce between the states. And wetlands have nothing to do with the commerce. Remember that toad in California? This was one of John Roberts' big decisions. There was a toad in California that was an endangered species, and he said in a decision that he was the judge on, that the federal government had no right protecting the toad because the toad made the unfortunate decision of living only in California and was not involved in interstate commerce. And therefore, the Environmental Protection Agency and the agencies that are charged with protecting endangered species, they have no business protecting the toads. Well, similarly, they have no business protecting us, because it's not related to interstate commerce. You get it? 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, America. How are you? Said, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
And welcome back, my friends. Yeah, the city of New Orleans, reports from CNN now that the FEMA efforts to rescue people have been suspended because at least one chopper has been shot at. That story is still developing. We'll keep you up to date on that. I recall yesterday afternoon when Keith Olbermann reported that the mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Nagin, had requested 1,500 police officers to stop their search and rescue efforts and instead stop looters. Now, let me ask you, what do you think is more important? For that matter, what's more practical? But I suspect that Mayor Nagin, this was, you know, I got the right wing talking points in the email yesterday morning. The whole point, you know, let's pound on the looters, Pound on the looters, pound on the looters. There's going to be nice graphics of black people looting. Never discount the racism of these people. That's not what the talking point said, but that, you know, it was implicit in it. And pound on the looters. It'll avoid a conversation about the incompetence and the screw-ups of the Bush administration. And I just have to ask, you know, if it was you or me, and our city was wiped out, and there was no electricity, no water, no sewage, nothing, and human beings can go a day, maybe a day and a half, maybe 2 days without water, maybe even 3 days without water. I frankly don't know. It's not very long though. I mean, we can go a couple of weeks without food, but water, and the water around you is filled with sewage and dead bodies and industrial pollution, and it's brackish. It's seawater, in part. Do you think it's wrong to break into a 7-Eleven and steal some bottled water when you can't buy it? And do you really think that the police in New Orleans should be saying, we're going to go after these folks? Now, the mayor later qualified that and said, people stealing food, he's not going to stop. Just people stealing clothes and goods like that. Yeah, that's making all the press, but what are people going to do with this stuff? So somebody steals five pairs of tennis shoes. They're going to have to leave all this stuff behind anyway. The entire city is going to be evacuated. Let's deal with the people who have medical emergencies. Let's deal with the people who are hungry. Let's deal with the people, the families with children. Let's deal with people who are stuck, who are trapped. I'm telling you, I think the cops have more important things to do, but the right-wing talk machine in this country was just pounding all day long. Oh, they're letting the looters go on and on. Yes, you have to restore civil order. Absolutely. If you don't, you have a Baghdad situation. We didn't restore civil order in Baghdad after we invaded it, and then look what happened. But, you know, on the other hand, it's not quite Shiites and Sunnis in New Orleans. It is important to have civil order. I think, though, that these calls from the Reich to shoot looters, I'm sorry, let's take care of people in need first. It just seems like a higher priority. Jay in Atlanta on the line. Hey, Jay, what's on your mind today?
Hey, yesterday I spoke to Neil Bortz, and I said, I got two questions. One, what do you think the political fallout will be from Bush not giving them the money for the levies? And two, what's the libertarian philosophy on how much aid these people should get? He goes, they're both absurd questions. I'm not going to answer them. They're hung up on me. And, yeah, so I'm harping on what you've been saying since yesterday. How is it possible there's not going to be serious political fallout from the levy issue? And too bad Diane Sawyer didn't have the balls to go, no, we did anticipate it. How are people like Sean Hannity going to ignore the egg on his face? And how do we even get frightened?
Well, Sean Hannity isn't even going to address it, just like Neil Bortz wouldn't. And the reason Diane Sawyer didn't ask the question, Jay, is because she doesn't want to lose her job. If Bush gets angry with her, he'll never allow an interview again, and she won't have the value to the news department that she has.
I'm not that mean. I'm just saying.
Say that again?
I'm just saying that when you have so many people so horrifically affected by it, I can't imagine how sooner or later.
And dumped it. Thanks a lot, Jay. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this song. I could kill a couple minutes just talking to lieutenants about Saddam Hussein.
Oh, yes.
I could grasp what they were saying and the dangerous game we're playing if I only had a brain. With my thoughts unconstipated, I'd be intellectualated and thinking without pain. Each executive decision would be based on more than wishing if I only had a brain.
If only.
Oh, I could tell you why. Tax breaks just help the rich and how the war in Iraq was really bait and switch, until I hit a little glitch. The dollar would have higher status, and the whole world wouldn't hate us for being inhumane.
Yes. Welcome back, my friends. That's Bill Jacobs, by the way. BillJacobs.us is his website. He also does our Razzle Dazzle song. Not ours, his. And you can find it all at his website, BillJacobs.us. Welcome back to the program. Yes, and in 2003, George W. Bush decided to reverse his approach to wetlands by saying that wetlands cannot be federally protected because they're not related to interstate commerce. And therefore, according to Judge John Roberts' opinion in the Toad case in California in that year, the Army Corps of Engineers and the Environmental Protection Agency have no business protecting wetlands. As Sidney Blumenthal points out in Salon yesterday, in response to this potential crisis, four leading environmental groups conducted a joint expert study, concluded in 2004, a year ago, that without wetlands protection, New Orleans could be devastated by an ordinary hurricane and, of course, wiped off the map by a Category 4 or 5. One of the report's authors, keep in mind, this was a year ago, speaking of the Bush plan to stop protecting wetlands around New Orleans, which would act as a buffer towards storm surges. Every 2 miles of wetland reduces a storm surge by a foot. One of the report's authors said there's no way to describe how mindless a policy that is when it comes to wetlands protection. The chairman of the White House's Council on Environmental Quality, what did he say? He says, the study is highly questionable. And everybody loves what we're doing. Well, if everybody's the developers who are the big campaign donors to the Bushies, yeah, I guess so. In June of 2001, George W. Bush says, my administration's climate change policy will be science-based. A year later, the EPA submits a study on global warming to the UN and says there is such a thing as global warming. Bush says, that's a report put out by bureaucracy. In 2003, the EPA comes out with a study that says climate change has global consequences for human health and the environment. The White House demanded a removal of that line. And thus we have more severe hurricanes. 20 Nobel laureates, 60 of the nation's leading scientists in February of last year, February of 2004, came out with a statement titled Restoring Scientific Integrity in Policymaking. They said successful application of science has played a large part in the policies that have made the United States the world's most powerful nation and its citizens increasingly prosperous and healthy. The administration of George W. Bush has, however, disregarded this principle. The distortion of scientific knowledge for partisan political ends must cease. Yeah. And ironically, As Sidney Blumenthal points out, on the day the levees burst in New Orleans, George Bush delivered a speech in Colorado comparing the Iraq War to World War II and comparing himself to Franklin D. Roosevelt. Franklin D. Roosevelt. If you can believe that, I got a bridge to sell you. Marvin in Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Marvin, what's on your mind today?
I wanted to comment on the looters, but you said we could compare himself to somebody in history. If I haven't counted my presidents wrong, he is actually George III.
That's right. He is the third George to rule the United States.
And he compares pretty well with the other George III, I think.
I do agree.
Okay, but on the looters, I think they, it's my understanding from listening to the radio that they were trying to ignore them until they start changed into armed robbery.
Yeah, so apparently some of them did, and somebody got shot, and I understand that you can't, you know, if you're trying to do rescue operations and people are shooting at you, you've got a problem. I haven't been through that in the United States. I mean, certainly many of us remember the riots of the late 60s and early 70s here in the United States, similar problems. I've seen that in third world countries. I was in the middle of a war zone in Uganda and trying to do relief work, and people were being shot around us, and it's tough. And it's a no-win situation. And the bottom line is that if Bush had planned for this in the first place, if our National Guard was not in Iraq, if they had taken the advice of their own commissions, if they had prepared for this, if they had, as Diane Sawyer suggested this morning in an interview with Bush, if they had had water and rescue and all that kind of stuff available immediately, we wouldn't be sitting around here discussing what happens when people, you know, take up arms. Because you got people taking up arms, by the way, on both sides. You've got the looters taking up arms, and then, you know, the picture on the front page of the New York Times electronic edition right now is a picture of a white guy and his wife with a shotgun and a submachine gun standing in front of their house. And so it's like, you know, New Orleans has turned into an armed camp. It didn't have to be. And the failure of the planning on the part of this administration is a large part of what brought this about. And then the failure to act. I mean, for 3 days, what did George W. Bush do? He went golfing. After all, he's got a life to live, you know. So,
Yeah,
Marvin, thanks for the call. It is a tough one, and we can't just you know pretend it's not there. You know FEMA's got a really really tough job now. Marty in Michigan, as a result of the incompetence of the Bush administration. Hey, Marty, what's up?
It's Margie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Margie.
That's okay. I have seldom been so undone by a news report as the one that I heard about 15 minutes ago on CNN about FEMA standing down their rescue efforts.
Yeah.
I'm like I said. Now I don't know the details of the violence they've encountered, but it starts to look a little bit like, well, we got the rich folks out. So
let the
okay.
poor people fend for themselves.
Exactly, because, you know, they were stupid in staying. So we're not going to come and fetch them.
Yeah, those people who didn't have cars, who didn't have buses,
correct.
Who didn't, yeah.
The
yeah.
people who were infirm and couldn't
and,
leave.
And just happened to have darker skin than many of the rest
yeah,
of us.
Yeah, every single picture that I have seen on the TV of people who are waiting to be rescued have been African Americans.
Yeah. Well, there's a large black population in New Orleans. I mean,
sure,
that's
sure,
simply the reality. And not all of them are poor, by the way. There's a very large black middle class in Louisiana.
Yeah, and they all left because they had the means to do it. What is FEMA's mission? I guess I'm confused about what they're supposed to be doing. If it's okay to just sort of stop because they're scared.
Well,
I mean,
there's two things here, Margie, that we have to consider. And this, you know, and this is the problem of looking at a snapshot rather than the movie, you know, rather than the whole
right.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, their job is to deal with disasters and provide relief to people. Their
mm-hmm.
job is not to restore order.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is not to provide police function. Their job is not to make sure that, you know, I mean, their job is to rebuild after a hurricane, an earthquake, a flood, something like that, and to relocate people if necessary. It's why they've got these camps built around the United States that some folks think are the concentration camps they're going to put us in should Bush ever take over. And I don't know, maybe they got something on that, but I'm not going to step into that conspiracy theory right now. But in
yeah.
any case, FEMA, that's what FEMA's set up for.
Mm-hmm.
The National Guard is set up to restore order. And this goes all the way back to George Washington putting down the Whiskey Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the National Guard is set, of course, it wasn't called the National Guard then, it was the state militias, but the National Guard is set up on a state-by-state basis to deal with problems, with crises that have to do with national order. Now, the National Guard, to a large extent, has been doing things like putting out forest fires and dealing with natural disasters. That's really not their original mission. Their original mission is to deal with things like insurrections, you know, again, going back to the Whiskey Rebellion.
Yeah.
And then during Jefferson's administration, the efforts of the state of Massachusetts to withdraw from the Union, and then, of course, the Civil War. So the National Guard's responsibility is to maintain order. And if FEMA is saying we can no longer safely rescue people, what they're really saying, and I'm surprised that CNN is not reporting it appropriately in this context, what they're really saying is that the National Guard has failed to maintain order.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that the reason for that is that all of the National Guard's emergency generators are in Iraq. Most of the National Guard for Louisiana, the state of Louisiana, most of their amphibious vehicles that could move through water like this, they're in Iraq. Most of the National Guard's Humvees are in Iraq. And a lot of the National Guard's troops are in Iraq. And Bush goes on TV and he says, oh, we're going to get 25,000 National Guard people in there. He's pulling people from Oregon.
to go down there. So this is not, I mean, you know, let's not take a pot shot at FEMA here. FEMA, they're like the relief organization that I was with when I was in Africa. We didn't carry guns. Our job wasn't to keep order. Our job was to truck food into a famine region. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we get shot at, the only thing we can do is hide. And we did. Although, you know, one of the people I was working with about a week after I left was shot and killed by snipers. So, I mean, you know, what we need to keep clear in our minds is that there are multiple agencies involved in this, and, you know, federal agencies, not to mention the state agencies, and that Bush has just been completely, utterly, totally, and absolutely incompetent in handling this. You knew that a Category 3, 4, or 5 hurricane was going to hit New Orleans. I knew it. We all knew it days in advance. George W. Bush, he's out riding his bicycle. You know, Nero fiddles while Rome burns. Bush pedals while New Orleans drowns. That should be our bumper sticker. Margie, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate your comments. Thank you. Thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Gary in Virginia. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
You know, after 9/11, we established a Homeland Security program, and we were supposed to have learned lessons from 9/11 of what to do in a disaster. We go into Iraq and find out how screwed up we were and the lack of plans. We should have learned from that. After this, it shows that we haven't learned one blooming thing from anything. This administration does nothing but sits on their
hind end
bicycle and gives out awards to people that screw up.
Yeah, really? No, I agree. Yes.
Are we going to?
Yeah, Connie Rice, you know, she's the biggest national security failure in American history. Make her Secretary of State. Alberto Gonzalez, torture policies that bring disrepute in the United States and inflame the war, inflame the entire Arab world against us. Make him Attorney General. George Tenet completely missed the warnings. Oh, give him the Congressional Medal of Honor. And George, what the lesson the Bush learned out of 9/11 was, if you have a disaster, exploit it for political purposes. That's the lesson he learned. You run campaign commercials with flag-draped coffins on them and say, vote for me. That's the only lesson he learned.
I asked this question last night on Alan Combs' radio program, you know, his program in the evening.
Sure.
He had a guest on from, was a representative from that area. What, you know, and his reply was, well, we did everything we knew we could do. You know,
we have
satellite phones that people should be having. We have portable generators that maintain the batteries. We ought to realize.
Yeah, excuse me. The portable generators from Louisiana are all in Iraq right now.
You know, I understand this, but that's a part of the planning that should be available. These things should be able to be drop-lifted into an area with the facilities this country has. I drive a truck. I can get across the country in less than a week. As a truck, we can lift them things in airplanes. Why we aren't doing it, and we're sitting down in Texas on a bicycle, or up in Washington D.C. while people are dying down there. This is just absolutely infuriating, and it made me so mad. This representative last night. Well, we're doing the best we could. Nobody could foresee this. Well, idiots can't foresee it, but people with brains can. Yeah. Unfortunately, the people with brains. I don't know.
I got it, Gary, and I appreciate you're welcome. I appreciate your righteous indignation and your righteous anger. It's absolutely justified. The Bush administration has blown it hugely, and we should not be at all surprised, because these are the guys who are following along with Ronald Reagan when he said, you know, you should be afraid when somebody says, I'm with the government, I'm here to help. And Ronald Reagan, when he said, the government is not the solution to our problems, it's the cause of our problems. These are the guys who think that all things government are evil, and therefore they cut the funding for the government, and all things corporate are good. This morning, when Diane Sawyer asked George W. Bush how he was going to handle the need, he said, and whether he was going to ask the oil companies to pay windfall profits taxes, he said, I hope that Americans will give money to the Red Cross. I kid you not. Larry in Georgia. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks. You know, first off, how can we expect anything more than what we're getting from George Bush? He is nothing but he's just middle of the road, everything he's ever done,
You mean mediocre, not middle of the road political.
There you go.
Yeah, actually he hasn't even been mediocre, Larry. He's every business he's had has failed, and he had to be bailed out by friends of his father or the Bin Laden family.
Yeah, and the other thing, you know, I'm a strong Democrat, absolutely 100%, always have been. But the thing is, I want someone, and I don't care from where they come. They can be from the Republican Party, they can be from the Democratic Party or whatever. I'd like to see someone step forward now and take a lead and stand up and get off their scared butts politically and say what needs to be said and put us in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree, but the problem is, Larry, that only the president or the senior members of the Republic of the House or Senate could do that right now. Really, only the president could do that right now. And the Republican Party controls all three branches of government. They got it sewn up.
But what I'm saying is, someone stand up and start. I mean, they don't have to be. You know, let's get something going. They'll get elected in 3 years if they will.
Yeah, well, you know, good point. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of political consequences come out of this. Larry, thanks a lot for the call. We got to move along here. I do appreciate it. Will this be the political Waterloo for George W. Bush? That's an interesting question. 10 minutes before the hour, I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I wouldn't screw up the environment or the money for retirement like the liberals complain. I'd impress all my poo-pooers, shocking all the evildoers if I only had a brain. Now I'd pronunciate much better, honor liberties to the letter for the folks that we detain. And when the world called me a baddie, I wouldn't run off to my daddy if I only had a brain.
And welcome back, my friends. 55, coming up on 56 minutes past the hour, 4 minutes before. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Don in Atlanta. Hey, Don, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Don. What's on your mind?
That's wonderful, buddy. Before I tell you some of the stuff, I just wanted to say, you're my favorite talk show host.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Now, I have three things for you. One is my wife just called me, and she says that...
Don, we're just about out of time. You got to do it quickly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Here.
Gas for $5.69 in Atlanta.
$5.69 in Atlanta?
$5.69 at a BP station, $6 for premium.
Wow.
And I'm real sorry that we're almost out of time because I had a couple of other good things.
Oh, that's okay. I got a minute. What else you got?
Okay. Halliburton. I was over in Iraq hauling fuel for them, and one of the things I learned is that they hauled food on their the morgue trailers that they use.
Right.
They hauled food on them.
Right.
Without cleaning them up.
You mean they hauled food in trailers that had petroleum in them?
No. The morgue trailers.
The morgue? You mean that had dead bodies in them?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And this is food for the civilians?
No, it's food for the Army.
Food for the Army?
Yes.
Holy cow. Oh, my goodness.
And then the other one, they didn't pay the TCNs, which is third country nationals, which they use instead of the Iraqis,
right,
to do the work. They didn't pay them for 3 months. And when they complained and they stopped work one day, they fired them all.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the corporate way. It's the American way, Don. Don, thanks a lot for the call. I'm, you know, sad news, but somebody's got to say it, I guess. Don, thank you. No, the hurricane is not George Bush's fault. Yes, the intensity of it may well have had to do with global warming, which is the consequence of a 20-year campaign that Bush has been part of to prevent the United States from doing anything about it or even discussing it. And certainly the destruction of the wetlands around New Orleans, which he helped perpetrate, made it worse.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on stations from coast to coast, on Sirius Satellite Radio, CRN Digital, RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, podcasting at Apple's iTunes. Welcome back to our program. Our phone number, 1-866-889-8894. Patricia in Arizona on the line. Hey, Patricia, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's up? I just
wanted to say that, you know, that I think Bush is probably the worst president we have ever had.
I put him right up there. I'd say he's more corrupt than Ulysses S. Grant or Ronald Reagan, who held the record for convictions of members of their office and their cabinet before Bush. Nobody's been convicted with Bush, but the criminal behavior is obvious. And in terms of eviscerating our civil liberties, he's getting right up there with John Adams. So, yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. John Adams, at least, was not corrupt. He was simply a wannabe dictator. So,
you know, after 9/11, you know, Bush was over there, what, like the next day. You know, in that case, it was all of the people who were running the money machine over there in New York.
Yeah, actually, it was 2 days later. But, yes, I get your point. And a point well made, Patricia, and I agree with you. George W. Bush has learned how to be an exploiter, how to take advantage of things, but he has not in any way figured out how to deal with real problems. I mean, it's like, you know, gee, we've been hit at Pearl Harbor. Let's attack Brazil. That's Ben in Illinois on the line. Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hey, Tom. The thing that strikes me most about the present expanding disaster is our utter failure of leadership and the fact that we have not made any use of materials on hand at the scene. For example, if you had wanted to actually evacuate everybody from New Orleans, and there was a mandatory evacuation order prior to this hurricane and flood, the fact that there weren't, you know, cars or airplanes shouldn't have mattered. That New Orleans is a port and has three major railroad lines running into it. Being a port, there would be empty boxcars at all times in New Orleans. It would have been a trivial matter for the Army Corps of Engineers, which has among its members railroad locomotive engineers, to have commandeered the rail yards, put together a train of boxcars, and gotten every last man, woman, and child out of New Orleans before this hit.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't considered that, although a lot of boxcars these days have been replaced by the flatbeds that they drop containers on top of that can be then transported to the back of a truck. But still, there are still enough boxcars around that they could have gotten them.
A container is a boxcar. You just put it on the...
That's true. Empty containers. Yeah, empty containers would work, too.
And venom with an axe.
Yeah, venom with an axe and toss in a porta potty and off you go.
That's exactly right. We could have had every one of those people out of there. There shouldn't have been a single lost life. This is all George Bush's fault for his complete failure to take seriously a event that was about to happen to his own people.
Yeah, well said, Ben. Thank you very much for the call.
Very welcome.
I appreciate it. Will Bunch is with us. Will has written a brilliant piece that I saw reprinted in Editor and Publisher, I believe, but you're a senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News, Will?
It's even more complicated than that, because actually the piece first appeared on my blog for the Daily News, which is called Attitude, and then Editor and Publisher picked up the blog item. So,
oh, okay.
But it's been making the rounds everywhere.
So how do people get to your blog, first of all?
Www.attitude, A-T-T-Y-T-O-O-D. It's a Philadelphia thing. It's hard to explain, but .com.
Okay, great. And the point that you made in your blog and in your article and in Editor and Publisher and in the Philadelphia Daily News is that New Orleans should have been better prepared? Could have been better prepared?
Yeah, prepared, you know, and preparedness, obviously, in this case, cuts across a lot of different levels. What I looked at in particular was the program that had been up and running for a number of years to try and greatly improve and shore up and in a lot of cases improve the levee system and also these pumping stations, none of which worked, apparently, but across New Orleans. There's a mostly paid for with federal dollars program called CELA. It's the Southeastern Louisiana, I don't know what all the acronym is, but it's a flood prevention program.
Right.
And it had been in place for a number of years. In 95, Congress authorized a lot of money for it because they had had a horrible flood, not from a hurricane, but just from a very bad rainstorm in New Orleans that killed six people. And I think about $750 million was targeted for this program. And, you know, from 95 to 2001, when the government was doing pretty well in the money department, the program was pretty much fully funded. And a lot of work was done and a lot of improvements were made in places. And then starting around the 2003-2004 time frame, the money for this program just started to dry up.
And why did that money start to dry up?
Because the federal government's spending priorities had shifted, and
the Bush administration.
Yes, exactly. And this program, by the way, I should make clear, went through the Army Corps of Engineers. So I guess that flows through the Pentagon. So officials with the Army Corps in New Orleans obviously wanted very much to finish the project and do these programs. Were very explicit and said that the funding squeeze was because of the war in Iraq, you know, that and Homeland Security. But I found in the Times-Picayune New Orleans Times-Picayune newspaper coverage of this over the last couple of years that there were nine different cases where officials said that Iraq was the reason that this program was getting squeezed and the funds were getting cut.
You know, the thing that I think is missing so much, Will Bunch, in the coverage of this, there's all this coverage of, oh, here's a family, there's a family, here's another family, or there's another person, or here's some looting going on, this kind of thing. I mean, the media is really very much dealing with the superficial level of this. There is very little discussion about the fundamental reason why so many people are dying and dead right now, which is that the levees broke. Had those levees not broken, the city simply would have been badly damaged. And, you know, people would have died. It would have been a disaster. But it seems that water is what's killing most people, number one. And water is going to be what's going to kill so many people. This is very badly contaminated water. And number two, that those levees didn't have to break, that there was, as you point out, there was this aggressive program to bring the levees up to the point where they could withstand a category of four or five hurricane, and that the Bush administration, starting in the year 2003, cut funding to that program so they could redirect that money to the invasion of Iraq. Is that not correct?
Everything you said is absolutely correct. Yeah, I mean, as far as the media coverage, the kind of story that I did, I think traditionally is the kind of stories that you would look to newspapers for. And we live in an era, and I've noticed this. You know, it was funny or not funny, but when the actual direct combat was going on in Iraq back in 2003, newspaper circulation didn't increase at all, even though it was a huge story. And that was because we live in a society where people turn to these, you know, three cable channels mostly to get their prime news when there's a huge story like this. And TV is going for the visual, and God knows, you know, this is probably the most visual American story, well, certainly since 9/11, and maybe even more so.
Right, you can only show a picture of a levee, water bubbling over a levee for 4 or 5 seconds before it starts to become boring, whereas people, you know, screaming and waving and jumping up and down and being rescued by helicopter, that's really cool stuff.
Right, exactly, and you probably would need some kind of talking head to come on and explain all this, and they would much rather cut to the helicopter pulling the guy off the roof or looting or whatever. So, this story is not going away. I mean, we're going to be, this may end up being on the level of a 9/11 type story, and we're going to be, I think this is going to be on the front page in addition to the other media for months. And I think, there will be plenty of time, for this story to all come out, and I think it is going to all come out.
At what point, and what's it going to take, do you think the mass media will start actually discussing the failures of the Bush administration in regard to this thing, the fact that they essentially set up this potential disaster and then failed to respond to it in a timely and appropriate fashion.
Well, unfortunately...
I'm hearing is softballs, you know?
Right. Well, as you remember the run-up to the war in Iraq, one reason that the mainstream media coverage was so weak was because there wasn't much of an opposition. You know, they were looking for, unfortunately, they tend to take the easy route and look for politicians or, an opposition party to kind of take up the ball and give them their cues. And, in that case, nobody in the Democratic Party or on the other side was really opposing the war, so they weren't reporting that. The same thing here. I think it may depend ultimately on, whether, the Congress people from Louisiana or leaders in Congress or people in position of authority start asking the questions that we're asking here. And if that happens, I think they will, certainly pick up the story then.
In the research that you did, Will Bunch, where in terms of allocating, I hate the word blame, but responsibility, let's say, for the failure of the levy, for the failure to reinforce the levees, for the failure to maintain order, for the failure to anticipate the evacuation, as Ben, who called a few minutes ago from Illinois, pointed out, the failure to properly evacuate people prior to the hurricane hitting. How do we allocate this between the federal government, the state of Louisiana, and the city of New Orleans? Who should have been doing what, and where did this thing break down?
I think the breakdown is pretty much federal. I mean, they were funding at least 70% of the program. There were several cases in 2004 where they went to the local governments in the New Orleans area and said, this project really needs to get done and it's just not in our budget. Can you do something? The Army Corps of Engineers.
Okay.
And, the local governments stepped up to the plate, and I think in at least one or two communities I saw articles where they, had to increase their property taxes a little bit or whatever to pay for these projects.
Levy repairs.
Right. I mean, all of these parishes down in Louisiana have emergency management departments, and because this is serious business down there, and this is not something that the local people take lightly. In defense of what seemed like some really good people with the Army Corps of Engineers down there, I don't think they took it lightly either, but they couldn't
get the money out of the Bush administration.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just ultimately the bottom line. They couldn't get the money out of the Bush administration to bring these levies up to standard. Now, give us a quick snapshot. We have a little less than a minute left of what how the levies work and why, what it would have taken to bring them up to code.
The levees, there's different kinds. Some levees have, kind of large steel or concrete structures in front of them. Some are just earthen levees. Unfortunately, the levee, the earthen part of the levees, as is the case in much of New Orleans, subside.
They get supersaturated and wash away.
Well, that happens too. I mean, there's all kinds of things. There is erosion, there's scouring, and I think there's also subsidence in their height among sea level because of the groundwater being taken out underneath, et cetera, the same reason that much of the city's been sinking. It's very complicated. A lot of times, I think from what I've read, studies when they have breaches in levees, it's because there's maybe an imperfection because you have bridges going over these canals and lakes and you have trouble spots, and I think a lot of the project was showing up these trouble spots.
We got to wrap it up, Will. I'm sorry. Will Bunch has been with us. Your website, real quick.
Attitude, ATTYTOOD.
Thank you. Thank you, Will.
All right, Tom.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead, yes, this you feared. Why, soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Gave them the old, never yet devil speak. Yes, with folks swindled them. No one could hear the truth above the roar. And though your debating was a stinker, they both
sinker. You razzle-dazzled them, and they gave you four more.
Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You cannot lead if you send mixed messages.
Back, my friends. Welcome back, my friends. It's, oh my goodness. The evacuation of the Superdome temporarily disrupted today after a shot was reported fired at a military helicopter. No injuries were immediately reported. This is from the Chicago Tribune, the Associated Press, actually, an article by Mary Foster. An air ambulance service official said that helicopter transports of the sick and injured were suspended, but the National Guard said Thursday that able-bodied evacuees are still being moved by bus to Houston's Astrodome. So it's not a complete suspension. Authorities said Wednesday that some 25,000 people who had been in the Superdome since Sunday would be taken to the Astrodome. But with the disruptions, the scene at the Superdome became increasingly chaotic, with thousands of people rushing from nearby hotels and other buildings, hoping to climb onto the buses taking evacuees from the area. Paramedics became increasingly alarmed by the sight of people with guns. Richard Zuschlag, president and CEO of Acadian Ambulance Service, says, "We won't go into the Superdome landing zone until security is restored." This is the group which is running the evacuation of the sick and injured at the Superdome. It's interesting, they have a private company doing that. He says, "We're now concentrating on the roofs of hospitals." Thursday morning, a seething sea of tense, unhappy people packed shoulder to shoulder up to the barricades where heavily armed National Guardsmen stood. And it goes on. One shot was apparently fired at a Chinook helicopter. It didn't hit it. "We're controlling every single aircraft in the airspace, and none of them is reporting being fired on," says the Federal Aviation Administration, Laura Brown. And she says they're in contact with civilian as well as military. So it may be that the shot wasn't even fired. We don't know. But the first busload of survivors has arrived at the Houston Astrodome, where they have air conditioning, cots, and food and showers. So, you know, it's a start. 25,000 people. This is truly a disaster of biblical proportions, of epic proportions. Welcome back to our program. Dave in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show. What's up?
Can you believe the level of bureaucratic incompetence that's going on here? I mean, why in at least 3 days have we not had at least a water drop through the air and some people with bullhorns out there giving people guidance? This is so basic. And no one can convince me that we can't at least do this much, you know?
I agree with you, Dave, although I would not characterize it as bureaucratic incompetence. I'd say it's an absolute and utter failure of leadership from the top down.
My question for you is, I guess, do you see a pattern with this administration that they could actually create a situation over the next couple of days that they could kick the media out and bring their profiteering Halliburton type of friends in to make money on this deal?
Whether or not they kick the media out, I don't know. It's possible. Certainly, they declare martial law and order the city evacuated and push the press out. Whether or not Halliburton and their friends, their corporate friends, are going to make money on it, that's not even an open question in my mind. There's the answer to that is absolutely. They will figure out a way to make money on this thing, big money. In fact, I think it was the guy who's in charge of the Treasury Department, although I'm not sure, one of the senior administration officials this morning said this isn't going to hurt our economy because there's so much money going to be made rebuilding the city that it's actually going to boost the economy. So there you go, Dave. Thanks for the call. I got to move along, but good point. And yeah, I mean that's the tragedy of this whole kind of thing is that when there's a disaster, you know, for better or for worse, unfortunately, when there's a disaster, it actually helps the economy. And when somebody's diagnosed with cancer, it's a $250,000 bump increase for the economy. We need to change our economic values, I think. 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 29 minutes before the hour, or 27 minutes before the 33 and a half minutes past the hour, however you want to do it. Digital time, analog time. Welcome back to our program. Repent America. You familiar with this? You heard of this group? You know, David, we ought to see if we can get somebody from this group on the program. Maybe you could even give them a call right now. It's their website is repentamerica.com. They have a rather remarkable article. Now, this is not just some right-wing crackpot group. Repent America has been defended in the past year, in just the past year, by the Southern Baptist Convention, D. James Kennedy's Center for Reclaiming America, the American Family Association's Agape Press, WorldNet Daily, probably the largest of the right-wing blogs or websites, rather, and Concerned Women of America, and Lou Sheldon's Traditional Values Coalition. Okay, so we're talking, you know, a Christian group that has been held up as the voice of everybody from the Southern Baptist Convention to the Concerned Women for America. They just issued a news release. I'll just read it straight. Philadelphia. Just days before Southern Decadence, an annual homosexual celebration attracting tens of thousands of people to the French Quarter section of New Orleans, an act of God destroys the city. Hurricane Katrina has put an end to the annual celebration of sin. And then they go on to say, although the loss of lives is deeply saddening, this act of God destroyed a wicked city, stated Repent America director Michael Marsavage. From Girls Gone Wild to Southern Decadence, New Orleans was a city that had its doors wide open to the public celebration of sin. May it never be the same. He said, we must not forget that the citizens of New Orleans tolerated and welcomed the wickedness in their city for so long. May this act of God cause us all to think about what we tolerate in our city limits and bring us trembling before the throne of Almighty God. Wow. Did these guys forget about Matthew 25? Did they? I always find it strange when folks get into this thing of, well, God saved me, but not the guy down the street. And I'm saying this as somebody who actually believes in the power of prayer. I'm not sure exactly how it works, I have to confess. But I've seen the Harvard prayer studies where they found that, you know, when people prayed for sick people, even who they didn't know, those people got well faster. Whether there's some sort of psychic connection that we all have, or whether there's some intermediary, or whether there's spirits, who knows? I don't know. I can't make any claims to knowing, other than, you know, thinking that it's a good thing. But to think that the flip side of that, that whenever something bad happens, it happens because a deity decided to do it to us, and that justifies our political point of view, boy, that's a tough one for me. I'm sorry, I just can't go there. And these guys at repentamerica.com, this is just over the top. Just over the top. And then of course you got other groups, you know, Fred Phelps and all these folks, you know, saying, oh, it's, you know, they tolerated gays, this is God's punishment. I'm sorry, that's not my God. And as I said, I consider myself if not a religious person, at least a spiritual person, and my God doesn't do these kind of things to people. Hurricanes do these kind of things to people. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Hurricanes, by the way, exacerbated by global warming, which has been exacerbated by the fossil fuel industry, which is spending millions of dollars to make sure that nobody in the American media talks about the impact of global warming increasing the ferocity of hurricanes. Tony in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program. Tony?
No, you're talking to Ed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ed in California. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, not much. I could be Tony.
Yeah,
you never know.
No, I pushed the wrong button. What's up?
They started this thing yesterday with the homosexuals and the stuff. you know, why can't we start putting this blame on ourselves? You know,
because 50%
of our kids are dropping out of high school right now.
Yeah.
And now we're wondering, because there's gang members roaming the streets, why things aren't going well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not God.
I got it. There's a real subtle distinction here, Ed, and I had an epiphany about this as I was walking home yesterday, and I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me before. Ben Franklin, I'd been reading Ben Franklin's autobiography, and he was all upset about how in England they had this was in 1750s that he was writing this, that in England they had a fairly good welfare system, social welfare system, so much so that people would go on the dole and they would stay there multi-generationally. And Ben Franklin was writing about how this was a terrible thing. And a lot of conservatives, and including folks like Bill Clinton, who is a DLC Democrat, they're really conservatives. A lot of conservatives use Franklin's writings and other people's writings of that era to say welfare leads to multi-generational poverty. And if you have, but the point that Franklin was making is that if you have welfare in the absence of opportunity, then you will have multi-generational welfare dependence. If, on the other hand, you have welfare for a generation and that generation's children have good schools that they can go to where they can learn real skills and have a real education, and you design an economy in such a way that there's real opportunity and there are good jobs that people can use to bring themselves up into the middle class, then welfare stops. The best anti-welfare program is a good job, but first you've got to have a good education. And the failure historically of welfare programs in the United States and the UK back in the 1700s and throughout has been, you know, let's just take care of people, but let's not give them the tools. It's the old, you know, if you teach a man to fish, you feed him for life kind of thing. And there has to be a combination. I mean, over the short term, you've got to give them some fish. They're hungry. But you also need to teach them how to fish. And we're not doing that. We have been stripping our public school systems ever since Ronald Reagan. There has been this concerted attack. Reagan, back in the 60s when he was governor of California, he has stopped free public schools, free public college for people. Oh, no, average people going to college? Sorry, it's only for people who can afford to pay. That was Reagan's doing. And then ever since the Reagan White House, he was the first to talk about, let's have a Secretary of Education who wants to shut down the Education Department. And it's all about creating, in my opinion, it's all about taking us back to the age of Dickens, where you've got...
This is what happens whenever you get fundamentalist around.
Yeah.
Because it breaks down into two things. They are not fun, and they are mental.
Yeah, okay, well said.
Have a good day, Tom.
Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Tom in Michigan. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'm just wondering where the Wizard's been, you know, from the 700 Club? You haven't heard any words from him, you know. He's got that phone to God. Why didn't he stop this thing?
Pat Robertson? Well,
yeah.
You know, I can share with you his and Jerry Falwell's thoughts about 9/11. I would assume that it's the same thing. I mean, you know, any kind of natural disaster, this is what these guys come out with. Here's Jerry Falwell followed by Pat Robertson 2 days after 9/11.
Man, I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Well, I totally concur. And the problem is we have adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government, and so we're responsible as a free society for what the top people do, and the top people, of course, the court system.
And then they go on to say, we actually deserved 9/11, and so I'm assuming that they think we deserved Katerina.
What we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is, could be minuscule if in fact God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve.
I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population.
So there you go, Tom.
Well, maybe it's time to take a male and female virgin and throw them off a cliff. Maybe that'll stop the next one.
There you go.
And I say, Viva Chavez.
There you go. That's the direction that they're moving. Thanks a lot, Tom. By the way, you want to support Chavez, buy your gas at a Citgo gas station. All that. Sure. Citgo is wholly owned by the Venezuelan oil company.
Well, I try as much as possible.
Yeah, okay, good.
Okay,
good on you. Talk to you later, Tom. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Tony in Washington, D.C. We tried you before. There you are again. What's up?
Oh, yeah, you can't keep a good listener down.
There you go. There you go. And you're one of the best.
My question's for your right-wing guests you normally take and see whether it's a state or is it a federal corporate or federal interest rather than, because you need taxes for the next eventuality to come up. So when you ask that guy called the right guy, whatever his name is, hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yeah, whatever his name, that comedian he used to come in, call, and the Rand group.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Evan Sayet and the Ayn Rand folks, yeah.
Yeah, could you just ask them, is this a situation where we should now, because they're going to say that naturally you're going to do this, but we say we're going to need contingency, so you're going to have revenue.
Yeah.
And also, do we have to go ahead and we continue? I think the president is going to try to go ahead and ask for another permanent tax cut.
Oh, sure. Yeah. In fact, that's going to be the first order of business in the Senate next week when they reconvene on Tuesdays. On Tuesday is the Paris Hilton tax cut, is doing away with the what they call the death tax, so that, you know, you can have more multi-generational wealth and, you know, more dynasties in America. Yeah, that's the important stuff, you know, Tony.
Right. And what about, isn't when that senator from Mississippi, he lost his house? Maybe he can co-sponsor that bill.
There you go. There you go.
And also, real quick, if you don't have education and ask about this, is it more cost-effective to spend $35,000 a year to keep somebody in jail rather than spend $35,000 for a four-year college?
I agree. And in fact, $35,000 is a low number. The last time I looked, it was around $40,000 to $50,000 a year to house a prisoner.
So you can just bullet them that. I'd be very sincere to hear that question.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Tony. Good to hear. It's always good to hear from you. No, I mean, that's the bottom line. This is why before Reagan came along and started and right-wing talk radio, before they came along and started changing the dialogue, changing the frames that we use, changing our fundamental understanding of things, we used to talk in this society, in the United States of America, from 1776 to 1981, we used to talk about investment in America. That our schools were an investment in our future. That Head Start was an investment in our children. That health care and prenatal health care and early childhood health care throughout life, is an investment in a healthy workforce, in a healthy nation. We used to talk about highways as an investment in our infrastructure. We used to talk about rail and roads and all this stuff, all these things in the commons, that we invested in these things. And Reagan came along and said, no, it's not an investment, it's an expense. And that now is the prevailing paradigm, the dominant worldview. It's the Grover Norquist worldview. Norquist is on the record as saying that he thinks that the only thing the government should do is provide for a national defense. And he wants to bankrupt the country so severely that we are forced into a situation where we can have nothing but a national defense. This is the libertarian worldview. It doesn't acknowledge community. It doesn't acknowledge the commons. It doesn't acknowledge that we have an obligation to each other, just a basic human obligation. It's burned into our DNA, the whole sense of family and community and neighborhood and nationhood, for that matter. The cons refuse to acknowledge that because they believe that greed is the highest value, that all people are motivated by self-interest purely, and ultimately self-interest will always win out. And the fact is that history shows that they're wrong. That when you run things by greed, what you end up with is a brutal society. Jeff in Denver on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
First, a quick comment on the Christianette's reasoning for the hurricane, then I'd like to talk about Cindy Sheehan.
Sure.
But it's interesting that they're talking about this New Orleans disaster, but aren't these hurricanes, don't they keep hitting the Bible Belt?
Yeah.
Didn't Mississippi get hit harder than New Orleans?
Before that it was Florida. Yeah.
Over and over again. So it's like, why is the Bible Belt getting hit all the time? I mean, a lot of these places are headquartered in the South, and it's the one that keeps getting hit.
Well, there's one group that's got a website out saying New Orleans got hit because they have five birth control clinics there that offer counseling on abortion services.
Ah, yes, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, about one thing, since we've had the vigils, a lot of us, we've had a candle burning on our front porch, so we're showing solidarity for peace and trying to get people to burn candles on our front porch 24 hours a day, because if the news media is not covering it, your neighbor doesn't see what's going on. So we can all show our support for the end of the war.
And you don't have to burn a candle. You can drag out of the attic or the basement one of those little Christmas candle kind of decoration things. And if you don't have one, maybe borrow one from a neighbor or find them online. I'm sure that they're easy to find, you know, for a buck or two. The thing that looks like a candle, right, that you can plug in and set in the window. That way you don't have to worry about running out of wax or burning your house down.
Yeah, and you go down the street, and we have them out of, just by those those candles that are the tall glass ones. You usually have a picture of Jesus on them.
Yeah.
And they burn for about 10 days for 99 cents.
Oh, really?
And,
hey, not too shabby.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. You go down our street, and you see these candles burning, and we're just going to keep them burning until the war's over.
Wow. That's great. That's great.
And so we're trying to spread the word around the country for that.
Creating community activism. Well, you just did, Jeff. You just
solidarity
did.
For peace. Solidarity for peace.
There you go. Okay. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Take care, Tom.
You too, Jeff. That's a fabulous idea. Now I got to figure out where our candles are. We moved in April. Half our stuff is still in boxes. But what a great idea. Thank you, Jeff, for that. Our number 1-866-889-8894. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into the chat room. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We were born before the wind.
You tell him, Van.
Also younger than the sun. Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic.
And welcome back, my friends. 55 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jim in Michigan on the line. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just think you're selling the Republicans a little bit short here.
How so?
Well, ever since W took office, the Republicans' plan has been to rape, loot, and pillage the country and the federal treasury.
Well, actually, not just since Bush took office. It's been that way basically since Ulysses S. Grant in the 1870s.
And they've just never let themselves get distracted from that object. And you got to give them credit for being single-minded.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, they fought tooth and nail against Social Security in the 1930s. They fought against the Wagner Act, against unionization in 35. They actually got a chunk taken out of it in 1947 when they got Taft-Hartley passed. They have been opposed to Social Security ever since it was created. They've been opposed to Medicare, to Medicaid, the war on public schools. I mean, you name it. Ever since the 1870s, the Republican Party has been the party that represented extreme wealth and corporate power. Period. End of sentence.
Right. And ever since W in 01, everything he's done has been a way to distract us from their real goal, rape, loot, and pillage. And look, we just had a hurricane hit New Orleans. And what's the Senate's first order of business going to be?
The Paris Hilton tax cut.
Rape, loot, and pillage.
Yeah.
That's what they're up to.
Yeah.
Their goal.
Well, you got to come up with something to replace the L for, it's got to be GOP. We got to come up with a new acronym for them, but yeah. Yeah, interesting. Jim, thanks a lot for the call.
Sure.
Good to hear from you. It's tragic. It really is. That what's so tragic is that so many Americans have bought the lies. They really believe that because the Republicans are from time to time trot out things like abortion or flag-burning amendments or anti-gay stuff. Now, they really don't believe in this stuff. If they did, being in control of the House, the Senate, the presidency, and the Supreme Court, they would have done something about it, but they're afraid to because they don't want the backlash. They don't really believe in these things, but they're convenient topics to trot out at election time, which they do over and over and over again, and people just go, oh, yeah, it's a gay marriage, holy cow, can't have that, abortion, no, I'm not against that, burning the flag, and it's really not about that at all. What it's really about is your pocketbook, hundreds of billions of dollars a year in corporate welfare, and what does Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush want to talk about? You know, some welfare mom, right? Total human welfare budget, $14 billion a year. But corporate welfare, hundreds of billions of dollars a year, never discussed. No siree, Bob. In the next hour, I got to tell you about two Ohio election officials who've been indicted for rigging the vote in 2004. It's happening.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm sorry I'm laughing. Folks in the chat room, you can get to our chat room, by the way, by going to tomhartman.com. Folks in the chat room just pointed out to me a new website out, Hartman Watch. With two N's, hartmann.blogspot.com. Keeping a watchful ear on the Marxist left. I love it. Oh, my. I guess I've arrived. I've got a blog devoted to bashing me. It's marvelous. Commie Watch, another terrorist friend of Chavez. Yeah, there you go. The vice president's addiction to oil money. Well, so check it out, hartmannwatch.blogspot.com. I suppose I shouldn't be giving PR to the attack blog, but I guess I'm flattered. What can you say? Anyhow, welcome back to our program. Lloyd Dumas is with us. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly, Lloyd?
It's Dumas. Yes.
Dumas, thank you very much. Professor of Political Economy and Economics at the University of Texas at Dallas. You are the author of the book Lethal Arrogance, Human Fallibility and Dangerous Technologies. And as an expert on lethal arrogance and human fallibility and dangerous technologies, what's your take on the technologies and fallibility associated with this disaster that we're watching, this kind of slow-motion disaster unfolding in New Orleans?
I think the most astonishing thing is with all the billions of dollars we've been putting into the Department of Homeland Security and the whole reorganization of the federal government to make sure everything was coordinated well, there seems to have been precious little planning for evacuation of an important city like New Orleans. New Orleans is a city of almost 500,000 people, or at least it was, and it takes some doing to get those people out of town in the event of an emergency, but there doesn't seem to have been much thinking about it. In fact, I looked at the various websites involved for the state of Louisiana and for the Department of Homeland Security, for FEMA, and basically the plan seems to have been get your car keys and get out of town. Get in your car and leave town. Well, suppose you don't have a car. Suppose you're one of the many poor people who live in the city of New Orleans, and you don't have that kind of transportation
accessible. Or even if you're a person who lives in New Orleans and chooses to walk to work. I mean, like in Manhattan, you've got a lot of rich people who don't have cars because they don't need one.
That's true. And, in fact, there are also people whose cars might be being repaired that day. You know?
Yeah, or just low on gas.
That's right. So there's a lot of different problems. There doesn't seem to be any thinking at all, to have been any thinking at all about that.
Which raises a larger issue, Professor Lloyd Dumas, and that is, If the whole rationale behind the Department of Homeland Security was to prepare for and prevent terrorist attacks, but to prepare for what might happen in the event of a terrorist attack, I mean that's you know they use 9/11 to hype this whole thing. Hurricane Katrina could just as easily have been a vial of botulism toxin dropped in the middle of New Orleans. It could just as easily have been a suitcase nuclear bomb, a dirty bomb set off in New Orleans. It could just as easily have been somebody blowing up one of the many chemical factories around there or refineries and threatening all the people of the city of New Orleans. All of these are scenarios that would involve immediate evacuation and rescue. Apparently, they're not ready to deal with anything anywhere in the country.
Well, it seems that way, and it's if you think about it, if you're heading up an agency like that, one of the things you would look for is activities, because you have this obligation to deal with terrorist attacks, but also with natural disasters, and that's even in the emergency, in the mission statement of the Department of Homeland Security on the web. if you have that obligation, the obvious thing to do is look for things which will help you in both situations, and evacuation plans are clearly among the most important of those things. But they don't seem to have paid attention to it, so you're quite right. In effect, it's supposed to be the Department of Homeland Security. Natural disasters are a threat to the homeland as well. But they don't seem to have done anything in the way of evacuation plans. In fact, they seem to have left it up to local officials and provided precious little support. In fact, I did find one thing that the Department of Homeland Security seems to have done. There was a pamphlet that I downloaded from the web, Louisiana Citizen Awareness and Disaster Evacuation Guide, which tells you which road to use when you get your car keys and head out of town.
That's it?
That's about it. And the last page has got logos from Red Cross and Louisiana, various departments and so on. And at the bottom, it says printed with funds provided by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. So apparently they're providing funds to print pamphlets. I don't know what else they're doing, but they're certainly not figuring out how to evacuate cities in the event of a disaster.
We're talking with Professor Lloyd Dumas, professor of political economy and economics at the University of Texas, the author of the book Lethal Arrogance, Human Fallibility and Dangerous Technologies. Professor Dumas, is there a website, by the way, for your book and for the work that you're doing?
No, there isn't.
Okay, but people can find the book, presumably, in bookstores or on Amazon.
It should be online, and the university has information about all of its faculty.
Okay, great. A caller to our program earlier in the day suggested that because New Orleans is a port city, or if not a port city, very near, you know, a lot of ports, port areas, that it's also a rail hub, that railroad cars traditionally, I mean, for over 100 years, have been carrying things out of New Orleans into the rest of the United States that come in by ship. And as a rail hub, it shouldn't be particularly difficult to put together a couple of, you know, 50, 100 car long trains full of boxcars, that if you had to empty out the city in a hurry, you could simply say, everybody get down to the rail yards and, you know, let's toss a porta potty in each one of these boxcars, take an axe and chop a hole in the side and in the roof to provide ventilation, fill them up with people and get them out of there. Why didn't anybody think of the, I mean, there's like low-tech solutions. We don't have to talk about fleets of 747s here.
That's right. And actually, it's even simpler than that. Every school district in the country has got a bunch of school buses. They're using them now to get people out of New Orleans. They could have used them to get them out in advance of the storm. Public city buses and the school buses. I heard nothing, perhaps you did, but I heard nothing about those buses being mobilized to ferry people out of town to get them out of harm's way.
No, to the best of my knowledge, all they did was say, get out of town, there's a hurricane coming.
Yeah. And in fact, I have a student, one of my classes is from New Orleans, was telling me that he knows some people in New Orleans who tried to get out. They did have a car, but the roads were so completely clogged by the time they were trying to get out, they just decided they had to stay. There was no point in, they didn't want to be in the middle of the road when the hurricane hit.
Hmm. To what extent is the responsibility of this, to what extent does the responsibility of this come back to state and local groups versus federal groups?
Well, the state and local groups have important first responder roles to play, but what is the Department of Homeland Security doing if it's not looking to coordinate local plans in the event of a major disaster?
Well, I think behind the Pentagon, it's the second largest cabinet agency, isn't it?
I think that's right.
The second largest agency in the United States government?
I think that's right. And, you know, there are a number of interesting questions to ask about the administration's role in all of this. For one thing, 2004 was one of the worst hurricane seasons on record, but the funds that were provided for maintenance and repair of the levees around protecting the city of New Orleans were actually cut back from some $36 million a year to about $10 million a year this year. So to save about $20 million, given all the billions we're spending on airport security and the billions we're spending on the Department of Homeland Security in general and the billions we're spending on the war in Iraq, which is supposed to be part of our effort to protect the homeland, given all of that, saving $20 million put a city at grave risk which experts have been predicting for years was bound to be hit by a strong hurricane one of these days.
But, Professor Dumas, we had to save that money in order to be able to give tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires.
Well, that's true. I hadn't thought of that, Tom.
You know, it's just critical. Paris Hilton and the Walton family, I mean, they're major donors to the Republican Party. They've got to have their tax cuts.
There are very serious issues raised by our set of priorities. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, we are using National Guard troops in large numbers for fighting the war in Iraq. And, in fact, I don't know how many. I haven't seen the figures of the Louisiana National Guard.
There's about 3,000 of them are in Iraq right now.
The purpose of the National Guard is not to fight in wars in other places. The purpose is to be available for emergencies of this sort. If we had full scope participation by the National Guard and a good mobilization plan to get people out of the city, I think we could have gotten them out. We had several days worth of notice. So there's no excuse for this failure of planning. It's just that the country's priorities have been set in the wrong places, even in terms of what makes sense to do the job they say they're doing to protect the homeland of the United States.
So here's the $64,000 question, Professor Dumas. The media is obsessively focusing on good video, right? Particularly the television media, which is how most people get their news. They need clips that are, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, right? That are heart-wrenching, that are, you know, the little kid standing on top of the car yelling, help me, help me. The people being airlifted, you know, the fragile folks. And in focusing on that micro aspect, that aspect of what's going on down there. I mean, it's all very real.
Yes.
They miss the macro aspect, the two macro aspects. One, that the vast majority of the death and damage that is being done and will be done in New Orleans and in that area is the result not of wind damage but of water damage, and that water damage is the result of the levees having been breached,
yes.
Number one. And number two, that the Bush administration cut funding 3 years in a row to the program that the Army Corps of Engineers was trying to carry out to prepare that levee for a Category 5 or 4 or 5 hurricane, and had the Bush administration not cut that funding back in 2003, those levees might not have given. They might not have given way. How do we get the media to talk about these two issues?
That's a very important question. I've been doing as much as I can myself over the last couple of days, and I will continue to do what I can. But the problem is we tend to focus on the symptoms on the surface. We don't tend to look beneath and say, why did this happen? No one can blame the Bush administration for the fact there was a hurricane, but for cutting funds for a city that was known to be at severe risk, which this is not news, that was almost hit by major hurricanes in 98 and in 2002. So we knew this wasn't just a bunch of researchers running around screaming the sky is falling. It almost happened twice before.
And in 95, six people died from serious storms there. That's what led to the whole creation of the task force to rebuild the levees.
Yes, so one has to look at the deeper issues and say, if this has been done for the city of New Orleans, if their funding was cut for such a critical matter, and it's important to understand that the levees require constant maintenance. Parts of the city are sinking. And if there isn't constant maintenance, they won't stay together. So this is not a matter of you build the wall and it stays there for 50 years. You have to keep repairing it and fixing it and maintaining it and so on. You have to ask, if they've done this for New Orleans, what have they done for the rest of the country?
Right. Well, all we have to do is look around. Our infrastructure is crumbling. Our schools are crumbling. You know, the only place that's getting money is basically police functions, building prisons, and a military. And, of course, that seems to be the priorities of these guys. Professor Lloyd Dumas, professor of political economy and economics at the University of Texas at Dallas, the author of Lethal Arrogance, Human Fallibility and Dangerous Technologies. Thanks for being with us, sir.
My pleasure, Tom. Take care.
It's 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Is you glad you got nothing to feel? Is you glad that it's all so real? Hey, babe, somebody shine on me.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and one half minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. the place where smart people get their news. Will in Pittsburgh on the line. Hey, Will, what's on your mind today?
How are you, Mr. Hartman?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Will?
Sorry, I made the mistake of asking you how you're doing.
That's okay. That's all right. What's up?
Hey,
it just, you know, on a really busy day, a lot of callers, people don't want to hear chit-chat. You know, they want to, what's going on here? Come on, get right to the meat of things. So, you know, we try to accommodate them. It's good radio, you know.
Make it snappy, Will.
Yeah, there you go.
Tom, I would really, by the way, just say no to oil prices and the hurricane. Remember that slogan, just say no to drugs.
Yeah.
My favorite hoodlum president ever in my time. Unbelievable.
You mean Reagan?
Oh, yeah. Regulate corruption and defrauding people. Holy smoke. It just continued into the 2000 with Enron, Halliburton, the Keating. Remember the SNL stuff, too, Tom? How many people lost their savings? Kids couldn't go to college.
But Neil Bush made a fortune.
Yes, he did.
With the Silverado savings and loan. I mean, there were some people who really cashed out on that SNL crisis. We came up with $500 billion, $500 billion and handed it off to those folks. And Neil Bush walked away with a good chunk of that.
And didn't he also, wasn't he involved also ripping off Medicare or Medicaid or something down there?
I'm not sure about that. I know now he's in the education business. No Child Left Behind mandates that schools have to buy tests and things from private corporations. And so Neil Bush is into that now.
I can't wait for that one, Tom.
Well, it's already happening.
Tom, you mentioned a week ago or something. Did your parents, did they immigrate to America?
My mother's family came to the United States in the 1600s. And, in fact, one of my direct descendants was the brother of James Madison. My father's parents, both of his parents, his mother and father, came to the United States in 1917 from Norway.
That's beautiful.
So it's a little bit of both, you know. It's like my mother is D.A.R. and my father's parents spoke Norwegian. I still remember, my grandparents are both dead now, but I still remember, you know, they would speak Norwegian when they didn't want anybody to know what was being said, you know. And my grandfather had this beautiful kind of Germanic accent.
Correct. Tom, did you know that the immigrants that came over here during the Great Migration to America, they were literate? They were the people who were escaping over there from either religious persecution, political.
Well, not all of them were literate, Will. I mean, you had a lot of people who came over as indentured servants who were from Europe, you know. In fact, in New England, where we used to live, I mean, we put a patio on the house that we had in Montpelier, and the guy who brought the flagstone over, he said these were cut in 1820. By indentured servants, mostly Welshmen and Irishmen, who came over, and they weren't necessarily literate. But they came over here and they made a living, and life goes on.
Are those indentured servants now? Can I call them the working poor now in America?
Yeah, that's the situation, Will. The working poor are today's indentured servants, and we very much have gone back to that. And then Bush wants to institutionalize this with regard to the illegal Mexican labor in this country by reinstituting the Bracero program, where these folks from Mexico who are currently called illegal immigrants will be able to work legal in this country, but they won't have rights in this country. And if their employers are unhappy with them, then they have to leave the country. So then they live in terror of their employers. Although many middle-class people live in terror of their employers, because if they lose their job, they've lost more than just their job. They've lost their health insurance. And if they have a medical condition, even if they get a new job with new health insurance, it won't be covered anymore because it's a pre-existing condition. So you got a lot of terrified indentured servants in the United States. And that's the Republican way. They rather like that way, Will.
They like to keep us down, Tom. Tom, by the way, you also mentioned about what a great health care plan the Germans have.
Yeah, they do.
I'm glad you made the communist list, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. I'm officially a Marxist now, according to these guys. Thanks a lot for the call, Will. Good to hear from you. Yeah, the German plan, the German healthcare system is a single-payer system. The British system is more like socialized medicine. Not quite. Both are better than what we have, which is nuts. 29 minutes past the hour. Fearless.
relentlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
You're gonna break another heart. You're gonna tell another lie.
Yes, HartmanWatch.blogspot.com. They're going after me. I love it. Well, it's time for a conservative alert. Yes, indeed, my friends. When looting happens in New Orleans, it's time, the conservatives say, to bring out the police and shoot to kill. But when looting happens in Baghdad, to quote Donald Rumsfeld, freedom's untidy, and free people are free to make mistakes and commit crimes and do bad things. End quote. So, there you have it. Right from his, right from the proverbial horse's mouth. Don Rumsfeld telling us, freedom is messy. Little looting, so what? Don't worry about it. Now, in the meantime, the Cleveland Plain Dealer is reporting. Two Cuyahoga County officials, election officials, were indicted Tuesday on charges of not handling ballots correctly during the recount of the 2004 presidential election. This from Bradblog.com. Kathleen Dreamer, manager of the board's ballot department, and the assistant manager, Rosie Greer, were each charged with six counts of failing to follow Ohio laws that spell out how ballots are selected and reviewed during a recount. These two are facing 18 months in prison. This was conducted at the behest of Cuyahoga County Prosecutor Bill Mason, who then had to recuse himself because his office represents the election board. This goes back to a complaint that was first filed in December, the month after the election of 2004, in which George W. Bush stole Ohio, in my opinion. Toledo lawyer Richard Kerger, who watched over the recount on behalf of two third-party candidates, filed the complaint. He charged that election officials failed to randomly select precincts that were supposed to be counted by hand and compared against ballots tabulated by a machine, that they failed to conduct test runs before witnesses, and they failed to investigate discrepancies between vote totals. So, in fact, here we have Hocking County Election Board worker Cheryl Eaton, who filed a sworn affidavit that an employee from a voting machine company, Triad, offered a cheat sheet to her and other county officials on how the recount might be carried off to assure the entire county would not need to be recounted by hand. You get this? I mean, the law in Ohio calls for a random selection of 3% of a county's residents, of the county's precincts, to be carried out by hand. And then if that doesn't match the actual machine count, then you say, okay, there's something wrong with the machines. We need to check this thing out. Well, it didn't quite work out. There was no count by hand because the 3%, the random 3% didn't happen. It wasn't random. And the voting machine companies were providing cheat sheets saying, here's how you say who voted where and when. In fact, several recount witnesses had testified to stickers having been placed over Kerry Edwards' votes on ballots before they were fed into voting tabulators before the recount in that county. Pretty amazing stuff. So could it be that the Bush pseudo-election, the Bush victory in 2004, carried by Ohio by fewer than 70,000 votes... 70,000 people had simply changed their votes, John Kerry would be president right now. Well, could it be that it wasn't 70,000 people? It was simply 70,000 little marks in digits in a computerized voting machine? And if so, is this going to get any press at all? You got to read John Conyers' book, What Went Wrong in Ohio, if you have any curiosity about this, any interest in the whole issue of electronic voting machines. Not just electronic voting machines, just election fraud in general. What Went Wrong in Ohio by Congressman John Conyers. It's actually a transcript of his hearings. And the Repent folks, repentamerica.com, we contacted them, asked them if they'd like to be on the program. They said no, they didn't want to be on the program. They're getting too many malicious emails and death threats. And so they don't want people to be calling them at 1-800-3-REPENT, their toll-free number. Please don't call them. Because of the article which is published on their website, which has the headline, Act of God Destroys New Orleans Days Before Southern Decadence. Just days before Southern Decadence, an annual homosexual celebration attracting tens of thousands of people to the French Quarter section in New Orleans, an act of God destroys the city. They say Hurricane Katrina has put an end to the annual celebration of sin. Isn't that just marvelous? I said that, not them. I mean, that's implied in what they're saying. Michael Markavage, or Marcevage, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, the director of Repent America at 1-800-3-REPENT, said, although the loss of lives is deeply saddening, this act of God destroyed a wicked city. From girls gone wild to southern decadence, New Orleans is a city that had its doors wide open to the public celebration of sin. May it never be the same. Did you see, by the way, the article? I don't believe I have it in this document. I had passed it along last night, but I got it someplace. Anyhow, I can't grab it quickly, but about how the Justice Department has decided what their priority is going to be. What their top crime-fighting priority is going to be. Online pornography. Not child pornography, not bestiality, not rape videos, or anything. Just simply good old-fashioned online pornography. They got to put a stop to it. Because the Christian right is very concerned. What about crime? No. Pornography online. That's the big issue. Justice Department reallocating resources to take care of that. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Ravi in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Ravi.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
This is good. I've been hearing a couple things on the rebuilding of New Orleans, and like some people in D.C. are definitely questioning whether it's going to happen.
Yeah, and will it be Atlantis?
Really. I've got a friend that's got a sales route that takes him down from Atlanta down through, you know, southern Florida there. And I met him this summer for a while, and he was saying that a lot of the houses and a lot of the hotels along his route just aren't being rebuilt.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was last year.
That was last year?
Yeah, that was from last year's, you know, stuff.
Yeah, wow. You know, it's funny. I have been to Venice a couple of times, actually, the city in northern Italy. And Venice is 5-6 feet underwater. And what apparently has happened over time, and probably somebody in the chat room will correct me on this, this is not the result of my doing scientific reading, but rather of going to Venice and talking to people, so I might be wrong. But my understanding is what happened is that Venice used to be a city above the ground, and that it's built on part of an aquifer. And as they kept pumping water out of the ground, the city kept settling. And over time, the city just settled and settled and settled until now, you know, a good chunk of it is underwater, and they kind of made lemonade out of that lemon. They now have, you know, it's the city of canals, but it's amazing. You take a boat down through these canals in between the streets, and you're looking into, like, the middle of the window of a house or the middle of a door of a house, which is now half underwater and half not underwater. Some of these houses, the entire bottom floor is underwater. And the houses were built, like, you know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. And, you know, part of me wonders if that might be a way to resurrect New Orleans. But I mean, Amsterdam, Holland has done this. Most of Holland is below sea level. And they just figured out, hey, you build dikes and you reinforce them and you do it right. And if, in fact, the Army Corps of Engineers had the appropriate funding from the Bush administration, if George Bush had not cut their funding over the last 2 years in order to pay for tax cuts for Paris Hilton, then they could have had that levee system in good enough shape that those two breaches that have happened to it would not have happened.
Well, one thing on the breaches, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday who kind of stays in the area down there a lot. The last time that they rebuilt the levees,
mm-hmm.
they sunk 8 inches since.
Wow.
I mean,
that just happens. I mean, you get a lot of soil. It's the soil, the ground underneath there is not, I don't think, concrete. It's not like the mountainous regions, you know, like down in Florida. You've got, you know, you get these sinkholes and things. You've got soil underneath that's very porous in some place, a lot of limestone and stuff, and it settles. Plus, you know, the levees fill up. They become saturated with water, and there's erosion off the top of them, and, yeah, that'll happen. Ravi, thanks for the call.
Oh, sure thing.
Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Gary in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Gary.
Hello, Tom Hartman. Well, I heard what you said, that they put something on the web, right? Well, they've just fostered.
Who's the they that you're talking about?
Well, whoever you mentioned. I'm sorry.
The 103 repent people?
Yeah. This whole administration, if you will, their whole concept, they foster this get-back mentality. This is prevalent in America. I think you can make somewhat of a case. I don't want to blame for everything, no, but you can make somewhat of a case that they foster this get-back mentality.
Get-back, what do you mean?
A get-back mentality. They can't face the facts and the truth on issues.
Oh, the Bush administration.
Yeah, and the analogy is they're trying to kind of get back at you.
Oh, yeah.
I really believe that.
Well, I think that it's more that the...
Basically, that's it.
No, the fundamental philosophy of these guys is, and they're not, by the way, ashamed of it or embarrassed by it, the fundamental philosophy of them is that the only purpose for government is to provide for a national defense, that the only thing that a government should do basically is mount an army and protect our borders, period, and that everything else can be handled by capitalism. And, in fact, people have tried that over time. And
but
what
not
happens?
Unbridled capitalism.
Yeah, people.
That's the difference.
Well, unbridled capitalism has been tried too.
A reference to it.
And one of the most articulate writers about what unbridled capitalism is like was Charles Dickens, whose father was thrown into debtor's prison.
What's going on in America.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and that's the world these guys want to take us back to. They want to take us back to Victorian era England, to that economic system where you've got a large number of very terrified poor workers and a very small number of very powerful elite leaders, managers, owners, and they think, and just to give them credit for a moment, not to vilify them, but just to acknowledge them, they believe that that's the way, and this belief goes all the way back to John Adams, by the way, they believe that that's the way to have the most stable society. And they value stability over freedom.
Well, it's not. And if I may add this, you know, I saw firsthand... I'm originally from Northwest Pennsylvania, not too far from Titusville, Pennsylvania.
Colonel Drake drilled the first oil.
Yeah, not very
States.
Far. I know Titusville very well. But anyway, yeah. I saw firsthand the wonderful, decent, sincere philosophy of revenue sharing between the federal government and the partnership that made it with the city and the states. I saw firsthand in Erie, Pennsylvania, what a wonderful partnership that was. Not only Erie, was across America, but not this administration. They don't have that philosophy.
No, they don't. They absolutely don't.
It's hurting our people.
Yeah.
And when are we going to get to the ballot box and change this?
Well, hopefully we are in 2006, Gary. I got to say,
okay.
I really think that there's going to be a sea change, and if not in 2006, and certainly in 2008, because people are waking up in droves. They are absolutely waking up, and they're coming out of the woodwork. Gary, thanks for the call.
Thanks,
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's just, I mean, this is. You have to understand the conservative philosophy. You go back and read Sir Edmund Burke, who was writing in the 1770s. In fact, Thomas Paine, after the American Revolution, went back to England for a while. Paine was a British subject originally. He had come over here. He wrote Common Sense and The Rights of Man and created the whole, you know, created the American Revolution, according to George Washington. And then he went back to England after the Revolutionary War and stayed at the home of Sir Edmund Burke for 2 weeks. And began this dialogue with Sir Edmund Burke, who was a member of the House of Lords and was a very, you know, the spokesman for the Tories, for the conservative government. And Sir Edmund Burke was of the opinion, well, he wrote this in one of his writings. He said, "It does me no harm if a man is allowed to engage in such a servile profession as a hairdresser or a tallow maker, a candle maker. However," Sir Edmund Burke said, "it does society great harm if such a man is allowed to participate in the governance of society." In other words, to vote or to run for office. And that philosophy was quoted by people like Alexander Hamilton and John Adams. I mean, we had conservatives. They were called the Federalists at the founding of this country. And they strongly felt that there needed to be a ruling elite, that you could have the appearance of democracy. In fact, that you had to have the appearance of democracy so that it would keep people quiet, but you couldn't actually have too much democracy. That was dangerous. So while on the one hand you had folks like Thomas Jefferson, who founded the modern Democratic Party, back then it was called the Democratic Republican Party, they dropped Republican from their name in the 1830s, and the modern day Republican Party came into being in the 1850s. Nonetheless, back then you had Thomas Jefferson saying things like,
I don't look to the rich for the salvation of my country. I will always place my trust in the average person. That's not a verbatim quote. He didn't say average person. I forget exactly. Maybe it was the yeomanry and the plowmanry or something like that. But in any case, I don't trust the rich for the salvation of my country, Thomas Jefferson. And on the other hand, you had Adams and Hamilton and some of the other conservatives of the day. Patriots, people who loved America, but believed that too much democracy was dangerous. And they actually prevailed to some extent in the Constitutional Convention in preventing we, the people, from voting for either the United States Senate or the presidency. And to this day, you can't vote for President of the United States. The whole point of the Bush v. Gore Supreme Court decision, where George Bush went and sued to stop the vote counting in Florida, out of fear that there would be more votes for Al Gore than for him. And it turns out a year later when they finally counted the vote, sure enough, Al Gore would have won by any measure if you counted every vote in the state of Florida. And George Bush did not want that known, so he sued to stop the counting. And the basis of their lawsuit was the Constitution does not give the citizens of Florida the right to vote for president. And he was right. The Constitution instead says that the Electoral College, the state shall send electors to the Electoral College in Washington, D.C., and the state gets to decide how to do it. And the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Tom Feeney, who's now the member of Congress, he was the Speaker of the Florida House, the guy who hired Clint Curtis to write vote hacking software, by the way, in 2002, he said, we're going to give it to George Bush no matter who wins, 10 minutes before the hour.
Plane. The mechanics point to one of Northwest's big hangars at the airport. Normally, one or two planes would be sitting on the tarmac waiting for repairs. Now, there are half a dozen planes with one aircraft waiting for repairs since Sunday. For Wynn, I'm Ben Groeneveld in St. Paul.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And who's going to be the one to say it was no good what we done? I dare a man to say I'm too young, for I'm going to try for the sun.
And welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Two just quick news stories. The Washington Post, Terry Neal, Talking Points column, questioning Bush's sacrifice for a noble cause. He actually mentions Buzz Flash's petition that I told you about yesterday, the day before, buzzflash.com, asking George W. Bush, why, if it's such a noble cause, have neither of your daughters nor any of your 8 nieces and nephews, who are all of military age, enlisted in the military? None of them. Not a single Bush child. None of them. And then he points out George W. Bush compares himself to Franklin Roosevelt day before yesterday, but four of Franklin Roosevelt's sons served in World War II. Number one. It's a bit of a question, right? And then, in addition, there is a fascinating piece in the German press. I just have to find it here. I had it just a second ago. I've lost it. A piece in the German, anyhow, an article in the German press talking about global warming and the hurricane. German conservative links, a German conservative policymaker said on Thursday, now this is conservatives, right, who are taking things over in Germany, said on Thursday that climate change played a role in Hurricane Katrina and urged the U.S. to join other nations in cutting the carbon dioxide emissions blamed for global warming. Well, gee whiz. Sean in Indianapolis. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, Tom? Hey, I just happened to turn on Bill O'Reilly on Full News last night because I really wanted to know if he would mention anything about, you know, about the National Guard being over in Iraq and why, you know, they're not able to do all the stuff that they're able to do in Louisiana because of that.
Right.
Well, not only did he not mention that, but he did perhaps the biggest bonehead thing I've ever heard on TV. He had on an older African American lady and their mom, and they were trapped in their house, and they were talking. The lady was 98, and the other lady was 71. He wanted to know exactly where they were at so that they could send the, you know, the police out to rescue them on the air. So there's these two really old...
Yeah, so he's looking. He's looking. He's looking very compassionate. Yeah, it's a stunt, Sean. That is tragic. Bill O'Reilly using elderly people to do stunts on the. Holy cow! What will these people sink to? Well, you know, there is no bottom to it. There just is none. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. I'm Tom Hartman. See you tomorrow.